So what's on your mind?
Just happy to be getting back in the saddle. I'm probably going to go back to the, I'm going back to the office on Monday. That'll be 13 days after my second shot. So
yeah,
I'm chomping at the bit. You know, just spoke with Eric, you know, the people on his team, they're up between 10 and 60% year over year through the first quarter. So, you know, Tim, you're up 230%. You're number one. But, yeah, but Eric's up like 30%, and Dan's up 30-something percent, and Ross is up 60%.
Net, net new assets, or is that just growth in general?
Revenue growth through the first 3 months of the year. So if you're doing $1 million the first 3 months of the year, you're tracking for $1.3 million now, you know, for number-wise. So I was up 19. Larry's up 15. Barry's up 10. That's because Barry had some weird numbers hit his grid last year. Generally speaking, for me, it's just,
pretty exciting. That's great.
Yeah, I mean, generally speaking, it's good growth. And, you know, I'd be happy with 19% if I wasn't hearing 30 and 40 from other people. But, you know, we're all competitive in this business. And
but that's good to hear.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, assets are flowing in and everything.
Yeah.
Got a hit from Salesforce today where a lady found us online and her mom died in Kansas and she needs an advisor, and her husband are here in Delray. So opportunity may be something Tim's getting involved with. Sounds like they got about 700,000 in Fidelity, and you know, there's not much from the mom, but they're dealing with a Morgan Stanley guy in Kansas. So I have to go around Mary's barn to make sure that I'm not stepping on anyone's toes, even though she reached out to me through the website and stuff. So, you know, right. Have to play the game.
Yeah,
I had another conversation this morning. My youngest uncle is probably going to be bringing another few hundred thousand. So that's exciting. You know, I had two clients come in last week. But, Tim, last time I talked to Rob, I told him I gave you Dan Caro and how it's getting harder now to part with some of these clients. We have an interesting experiment upcoming, Rob, because Eric's going to want us to do our book segmentation Pareto style, you know, to see who the double A's and all that stuff are. So I said, this is going to be very quick for me because I don't have a lot of garbage clients. But, you know, I'll do it nonetheless. You know, I'm sure it'll help me identify who, you know, who's kind of the advocate and who are just the clients. Yeah, which is always what we want.
Yep.
We gave Christine a raise, getting her moved up the ladder some with her compensation. We just moved her up about 500 a month. So she's pretty excited about that. And the guys actually agreed to start to migrate towards the new comp plan. Where on Eric's team, yeah, you keep 100% and then you pay to have it managed, so to speak. So, I was almost fell out of my chair when both of them said they were ready to go on that. So we're trying to figure out do we say anyone, you know, clearly if you have something in the pipe, you know, you can't sandbag that. But we're talking about maybe just putting a cutoff of June 1st or something like that. And any new introductions after June 1st would be eligible to essentially go to your whole number. And I'm sure that will be more motivating for all parties if you can get 70% to 100% of the revenue off of a new relationship. Hopefully that will motivate you to get more new relationships, one would think. We will find out. I'm excited.
I'm really excited to hear that they have such an aggressive program for new assets. No wonder they're bringing in so much. Yeah, the team, Eric.
Yeah. So a couple of the concerns is just that, you know, like, and this is something we knew, Eric's team's a little bit more siloed in a sense, like they're not necessarily collaborating with each other on all their clients.
Because of the 100%.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Now look, you know, like one of the old guys on the team, Howard, he's 85 and he's like on every board of every Jewish, everything in town. And he helped bring the football team to FAU and he knows everyone. And from time to time, one of the young guns will get a hold of someone who knows Howard from the club or whatever. They bring Howard in and cut him in, you know, and then they close the business, you know. So Howard can come in and say, oh, Tim's amazing. I work with Tim. He's the best, blah, 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 blah. Then, you know, Howard gets stroked on it as well. So,
okay,
but it gives
Howard,
you that flexibility.
Howard won't live forever.
Correct. And it gives you that flexibility to bring in someone you have some to share as well. Yep. Larry, we're just talking about when you're able to get 100 to 70% of the business, so that gives you the ability to bring in other partners to strategically help close business if needed, like, you know, Ross will do with Howard or whatever the case is.
Right.
So on our 4 o'clock call, Eric's going to be going over the growth numbers, but apparently Ross is up like 60% and Eric and Dan are up like 30% year over year through the first quarter. So, you know, you're at 15. I think you're around where Julie's at. So everyone's doing, you know, I'm at 19, Barry's at 10. Tim's at 240%, so Tim's the master. But, you know, generally speaking, you know, we're moving towards more personal accountability, which is something that Larry and I are both excited about. And I was curious that Barry was so willing to go that route. But, you know, I think he's like, as long as my base salary is intact from our old stuff, I think he's willing to kind of get on board, you know, because everyone's
yeah,
got to, he's got to
show. Until you tell him it's not.
Well, yeah, I'm sure we'll have further conversations, you know, because we're going to need to do a split adjustment before our legacy books gets locked in.
Right.
But he picked it up a little bit last month. So that's good. I talked to Christine about getting folders made and starting to go after some of these professionals. And I need to revisit her, what do you call it? She's supposed to read those 2 chapters in Supernova. So I got to follow up on that.
Correct. She was going to get it all done today. I was in the office this morning.
Oh, great. So. We're also, I got the first round of corrections back from our marketing department on our strategy menu. So
right.
We're going to be able to have our strategy menu to send out to prospects and clients. And we'll also be able to create kind of like a live spreadsheet to where if someone says, I want to give you $1 million and put it in these 3 strategies, we kind of plug it in the spreadsheet. And then it gives them an example of what types of names they would own and what the yields would be, you know, kind of they could kind of see what it looks like. So that'll be very helpful to us because right now we've opened 500 accounts and almost 140 million in PM, and we've had nothing to show people other than what
we've had no marketing. Exactly.
Yeah, nothing. Like, hey, take our word for it.
Is this because of Eric that you've been able to get through this?
Well, yeah, I got like one thing back asking for like, all they want me to do is like I literally pounded out a bunch of descriptions laying on my couch with serious back pain and like, they hardly reviewed any of it. They're like, oh, this all looks pretty good. You know, like just put a line in there saying this is for this type of client with this risk tolerance. And, you know, you guys should be pretty good to go. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
That's
you know,
how
like,
that works, right?
Yeah,
not-
yeah, yeah. His team. Like, look at this. I'm going to show you something. So I'm going to share my screen here if it'll let me. Can you guys see my screen, a Word document?
Yep.
So when Tim and I wanted to get our option strategy approved, this one section here for taxable income was 13 pages of disclosures and clarifications and everything. Like for them, this is it. Oh, dividend growth? It's designed for investors seeking long-term appreciation. No problem. I need to throw that line into each of my sections. I need to make it either say that or I need to make it say, like for taxable income, designed for investors with a long-term time horizon and a desire for above-average cash flow, and as a secondary objective, long-term appreciation. No problem. Like, and then they threw a bunch of disclosures on the end, which I could give 2 shits about.
That's exactly
but yeah,
why we're doing this, Ryan.
Yeah, this is what we're talking about.
Stop beating your head against the wall.
Unbelievable. Like, and his assistant was like sheepish about it. She's like, oh, you know, they want you to change some stuff. I'm sorry. And then like, I came back and I'm like, this? This is it? I was like, yes, you know?
It's wonderful.
Do you think anyone's ever told Eric that he's not a money manager through one of those compliance meetings?
Yeah, well, we're going to throw this other section in here, which is, and that's the other thing too, like, I'm going to be able to steal this little nugget, where like over here, we could throw something in here that says, for the past four decades, the Morgan Stanley Portfolio Management Group has addressed the needs of high net worth, you know, just whatever, fluff, but it sounds nice, you know, and, you know, just, it's, yes, so to your point, this is what we're talking about, where like, you know, just by having this, it's going to make our close rate higher, our timeline to close business a lot shorter, because now I can blast that out and I can blast the spreadsheet out to somebody showing the types of positions and say, this is what your account will look like as of our positions on March 1st or whatever. And then monthly, we just send them the positions in the model. They approve it. And then we send it, you know, then we have a new thing to send out each month. So, and then, you know, we're going to have other marketing materials. They have video updates that they're doing, and they have their own social media, like consultant inside the firm. And then we also have like a third party paid consultant to help us with marketing materials and stuff. So, you know, they know each other. So it kind of kicks back and forth much quicker. And, you know, the turnaround for them is like 48 hours, whereas for us, it's like 48 weeks. So, you know, this is exciting, you know, to have this stuff going and not really, you know, team discussion, but you know, I've had some more detailed conversations with Eric about how we're going to align the strategies and align his and mine's role a little bit, you know, in terms of like, you know, he wants me to narrow the number of strategies we're offering, you know, and, you know, we want to kind of get it down to where each person's doing two or three strategies as opposed to like each person's doing six or seven strategies, you know? And there's certain things that he's not as jazzed about doing. And, you know, like his tactical income and dividend growth are probably 70% of his assets. So these two are, I'm sure, going to remain his babies, which is fine considering we don't have a tactical income and I don't want to do dividend growth, you know, so great. But the question, you know, some of the teammates have asked is like, well, if you're doing a presentation, are you going to recommend the stuff you don't get paid on? You know, like I can say, sure, I will. But, you know, I'm sure I'll be happier if it was going to the stuff I got paid on. You know, like, I'm not going to lie. So we're trying to figure out how to reduce the conflict on some of that stuff where, you know, maybe on some of the strategies we run them together and maybe he gets 70 of it, I get 30 of it, or then like as it grows, then how do we adjust that, you know, and like, you know, but that's kind of like down the line stuff that's not really front of mind type, for the time being right now, we're moving forward as is for at least the next
good problems
have. Yeah. He's like, none of your strategies are doing bad. All of them are performing well. So there's no fire drill to really change anything. But Larry, I did go back to him and say, look, you know, like I'm going to have to either run these strategies perpetually, or we got to figure out a way to get these into some of your models without us giving up 30% of our legacy practice. You know, so, you know, I said, if we have 200 million in managed that, you know, if we give up 30% of that, that's 600,000 in revenue. Like, you know, none of us are going to be excited about that. He's like, no, we don't want to do that. We're looking at just only on growth. I'm like, I'm hearing it, but I don't know the path yet. You know what I mean? Like, I think the heart's in the right place, but we don't have all the steps fully worked out. So, you know, that's there. And then hopefully as we roll out the 70% rep code, that's going to make Barry, Larry, and myself more willing to part with more accounts as well. You know, you give up accounts.
It's 100%. It's 100% rep code.
Sorry, 100% rep code. 70% if you're using managed money. Okay. You know, but if you're doing alternatives, you would make 100% on that, on those assets. So your ROA on those accounts may.
Does it mean for your strategies that you run, you're going to be getting in the same deal that Eric has with his people?
Correct.
The
idea is to run everything the same. And then when Eric's people put money into something I'm doing, I would get paid on it. If it was something that he's doing, he gets paid on it. If it's something we're doing jointly, you know, that's the idea. And hopefully over time, you know, we're going to be able to leverage me to help everyone else bring in more business. And I'm going to continue to work with a very small caseload and leverage my time by helping other, you know, if I can do 8 appointments a day and help bring in $10 million, I'm going to get some action on that. I'm not going to get all, you know, I may get 10%, but it's $1 million, you know, like it's worth my time. You know, so we'll have to see how this continues to play out, with the team. But clearly if you're able to get 100% of the business, it should be a lot more motivating to get your ass out and get more business, you know, and I'm sure that Manco is going to do so much business. It's going to drive me wild, but, let's hope that's the case. $150 million.
When will you go to that? Sure. When will you be on that model?
We could theoretically go to it as soon as they can open the rep codes on new business. But we have to hammer out a couple more details. But generally speaking, we wanted to make sure that, you know, anything that's currently in the pipe is kind of considered team stuff. And, you know, no one's able to sandbag it to 100, you know, so it has to be like a new novel introduction post a certain date. But, you know, we could go to it later this month or next month or, you know, whenever, you know, we can, you know, the only technical hang up is that, technically, they're dissolving both of our teams, and a new team is going to be rising out of that. So we want to make sure that the dissolution happens and the new team rises out of it before we create a new rep code. Otherwise, it's going to create, like, another round of work. And there's Murphy Dog. Otherwise, you know, and our team operations manager might want to stab me with a pen if I ask her to create a couple new rep codes right now. She's...
Hey, I got a question that's probably good to ask for Rob is here. What about outflows for you guys? I know that you're going to like timestamp it, but, you know, arguably Baird is not doing Supernova anymore, and Supernova is a service model in order to enhance your client exposure and make sure they're happy. If he's not doing it, I mean, who's to say that he's not going to have high attrition? And if he's got high attrition, that's just going to hurt you guys from the old book of business, isn't it? Have you thought about doing some sort of a model where, you know, like, and this is just an example. So say Larry loses $1 million client after the new model comes into fruition, the old model's there. I mean, arguably you can say it's because Larry's not doing what he should be doing with his clients. I mean, it would be Barry in this case because he's not doing Supernova. But have you guys thought about that, or is it just going to whatever it currently is? So you're promoting net new assets, but are you putting a mark on outflows? Because outflows could be considerable.
No, I probably haven't thought of that, Tim. Yeah. You know, we're going to essentially track the revenue done in our core rep codes and have an annual reset or a biannual reset or whatever. You know, we're going to have something to smooth that out for sure. It's not going to be permanent. Like, our legacy book will be permanently wrapped in a wrapper, but the splits on that is not permanent. So, like, if, for instance, to your point, if I bring in $50 million of assets, or, like, if Larry's got a big client that may have a liquidity event. So if Larry brings in, like, if Mike sells his business and brings in 20 million bucks and Larry does another 100,000 of revenue, then the following year, Larry's going to get a larger piece of that pie, or, you know, however we decide to do it, you know. And what we have to be careful of is, you know, somebody doing a large insurance transaction and then, you know, taking equity for 2 or 3 years, you know, we have to, I don't know, somewhat, but generally speaking, yeah. So 893, 894, 895 are kind of like the legacy core numbers. So if you know, we can see the revenue that's being done in those very easily, and I'm tracking that very closely. And just Rob, so you can see what that looks like. Let me see here. So here, you know, this is my share of the revenue. So year to date in 895, it's $47,000 received. In 894, it's $47,000 received. In 893, it's $46,000. You know, so I'm 895, Larry's 894, Barry's 893, and then 142 is my 60% number. So, you know, I have that business coming in also in the legacy book. So, you know, we can track, and if we look at T12, like total revenue, see that Larry's out in front here at 650 over on this side, Barry's at 615, and I'm at 581 on a T12 basis. So, I've been closing the gap on Barry rapidly, and, you know, year to date, we're actually all pretty equal. You know, if you look at these things, but then, you know, if I add in 142, I should get, there's probably another 15 or 20 grand. Sorry, so we have so many pages of rep codes now. But yeah, so it's got fourth page of rep codes on. Yeah, so there's another 15,000 in 142. And Larry's starting to put some in that other. And what's your number, Larry? Like 143 or something like that? So yeah, we will track for that. So, you know, if we add the revenue onto there, you know, like I'm not too far behind Barry right now. And, yeah, if we add 142 in. So we're getting there. Yeah, it's like 142's got, yeah, 48,000 in T12. So if you add 48,000 onto this, that puts me at 630, Barry at 615, Larry at 650. So we've been approaching parity. You know, like Barry had a nice month last month. You know, where he did some business. So we'll track that on a year-to-year basis, or you know, like we may do a roll, you know, like we may do combination of prior 2 years, or I don't know how we want to do it. That's a detail we have to hammer out, but we will be able to track that. So essentially, if all the money's going out the back door, Tim, it will be accounted for. But when we transfer revenue to you, it's coming out of these numbers. So Larry and I, given up, you know, there's 75,000 in 071 right now. So whatever you've brought in, taken from that, the rest of it's come from Larry and I, and it's come out of these numbers. So maybe Larry's giving you 25 and I've given you 15, or I don't know what that is. Manco hasn't given you that much because he's been trying to keep this number up as close to Larry and I as possible. So
he's given Tim one account.
Huh?
Right. He gave Tim one account.
No, I mean, you know.
Sorry.
Yeah, yeah, but I'm just saying, like Barry's been fighting the system because he doesn't, number one, he doesn't have a lot of accounts to give away, and number two, he's trying to keep these numbers higher. But the reason you don't have Moses and you don't have these other households he should be giving up is because he keeps looking at this number and he wants to catch Larry, you know? So while he's trying to catch Larry, I'm passing him because he's not paying attention, but whatever. You know, so we'll sort that out, you know, like, but that's why, like, the split, like, you know, Barry's not staying at 37% of the practice because he's, you know, not generating it and not earning it, not acting like it. So, you know, but I'm eating shit for another year to facilitate the deal to happen. So we'll figure it out.
So what about, quality of client experience. I mean, he wants to supernova a lot in terms of investment process, right? He wants fewer investment process. He gets the idea that fewer is better and streamlining is better. What about streamlining the quality client experience and making it consistent? What are the chances of adopting Supernova?
For Barry or for Eric or for who?
For Eric.
So he's got a long-standing relationship with Perito. Duncan McPherson,
yep,
and him, worked together a long time. Dan, who's kind of the fourth largest producer on the team, is doing Supernova Lite, I'd say. Like, he's embraced it and he's been trying to do it more. I think he just read the book. I don't think he received any coaching. I think ultimately what it comes down to is if we come in there and we start kicking ass and it's working and we're doing it, then he's going to want to do it. It's really, he's not an idiot, so if we start gaining ground on all his people, then I think that it's going to put them on notice, so to speak. But walking in the door, they're extremely confident that the way they do things is, if not the best way, a really great way of doing things. But I think that Eric would be well served to embrace Supernova, because he told me today, like, he heard from a guy today that has $200 million in play, and the guy sent me an email, said, hey, we're going to give you $5 million to get started and show us something or whatever. And he's going after those types of clients, and he tells me he wants to focus on $50 to $100 million. But he's tied up in meetings all day dealing with bullshit for all the other advisors. So I think he should do that. And I think that once he has confidence that there's other lieutenants that can do things on the team, that he may free up more of his time and be more apt to do it. But I think that he is, in his mind, he's trying to do it. But, he does it by leveraging relationships. Like, he'll keep 200 clients in his name, but he'll have a lot of them worked by other people predominantly, if that makes sense. He hires the juniors, right, to handle the relationships and the calls, so to speak. But I think many of them still feel like they're working with him.
We don't care, right, who calls. We just, everybody gets 12-4-2. So right. If everybody got 12-4-2, then you could use that as your mantra for the whole team. But if people are not getting called in 2 years, then... because nobody's calling them because you don't know who they are, then you got some issues, right?
Right. Like, they did a conference call presentation or a webinar, and they had 100 people on it, and they were excited because there's 100 less calls they had to make that quarter. And, we were like, like the Mutombo commercials, Yeah, exactly.
No.
That's an enhancement, right? So I think that, one of his younger people that's really growing quickly is very big on the 80-20 principle as well. And he's starting to get to the point where, Ross has been getting fed a lot of smaller accounts, and now he's starting to grow on his own. And he's hitting the wall of being run by your practice, and I've talked to some other advisors, Kim and Charlie and Patty and some of the people I've spoken to you about that I know are kind of getting to the point where their practice is running them, and they're kind of plateauing some, and I think everyone knows what they need to do, but doing it is a lot harder,
But it would help everybody. I mean, everybody wins then.
Yes. So from Eric's side, he had a conversation with you, and he had a conversation with me where he wants to utilize Tim more and send more business Tim's way, which is great for Tim. But the team needs more new talent, in order to feed a lot of this stuff towards. Is my dog going to fall off the back of the couch? I don't know what he's doing. They need more young advisors, because right now above Tim, Monique is in her fourth year and she's doing like 350 grand and her mom does $1.4 million, $1.5 million. And, you know, she has some help there. And then Ross is doing 500,000 or 600,000. But those are the next two smallest producers as we sit. So, you know, and then everyone above Ross on the current team is either, you know, 90 and, you know, limping to the finish line, or, you know, Dan, Julie, and Howard are all doing, you know, $1.2 million to $1.8 million and doing really well and bringing in business still. And, you know, there's not a lot of places to push the capacity to, I guess is what I'm trying to say. You know, yeah, we're considering bringing on some more people as well, but, you know, that's the next step.
Yeah, it sounds like a natural. I mean, once you get a little influence and control, then everybody pares down to 70 clients and bring on new FAs and you know, then then the growth rate really goes through the roof.
And there's another guy they're trying to bring on that might be bringing a producer or two with him though, so he may have his own kind of market already within the team.
But the more Tims you have, the more capacity you have. Then everybody can get down to their skinniness, you know?
Right.
I mean, you're doing $1.2 million doesn't mean you should be doing $1.2 million, right? If you're doing $1.2 million with 300 people, you know, your capacity is zero for growth.
Right.
So you're 300 clients, you don't even want to talk about growing. You grow, but it's purely by reaction. You know, there's no marketing because you have no time.
Right. I agree. And, you know, this is where we're fighting the machine, so to speak. You know, like if we were an independent shop right now, we could just put out a thing and say, hey, we're going to hire someone 50,000 base salary plus commission. And we have, you know, we could do it. Right now, it's, you know, we're fighting for the resources of the firm, you know, like where, you know, we want another assistant and our branch has to get rid of two assistants. So if they have to get rid of two and we want one, that's a number of three that needs to, you know, something has to happen there, or, you know.
Right. You know, why are they getting rid of assistants? The cutbacks?
I'm just saying, like, this is a common type of situation where, you know, with headcount, you know, like they've lost a lot of advisors. So I don't know what the numbers are, but I'm just saying this is what we're up against constantly. So like before, when we said we want another assistant, our manager said, you know, hey, I just spoke to this guy, Tim Greco, who's a great guy. And economically speaking, you know, I can get you Tim and the firm will pay his salary and you guys just need to feed him business, which is what you guys are trying to do anyway. But, you know, Tim's not an assistant. You know, he's not an admin. Now he's been able to take off some of the operational role for like financial planning and some of those other things, but he's not there answering phones and, you know, opening accounts for us, you know, which no. So now, and especially as he ramps up, you know, the average production for an assistant used to be $1.6 million. And right now our team is tracking at 2.7 to start the year. And, you know, we're also opening accounts for other advisors that are putting money in with us. So Christine has $2.8 million of revenue flowing through her. And when it used to be $1.6 million, like 3 years ago, you know? From our standpoint, part of the reason to join with Eric's team is that, like, you know, they're in a situation where they're kind of above capacity too. So now you put the two of us together and we say, hey, you know, what the hell? You know, like we've got all this revenue, like, you know, we need help. And, you know, Eric can talk to management and he's got a direct line in where, you know, his team has $3 million in revenue that's not even counted because it's going to retired guys right now. You know, so like that, they don't even give us that towards assistant credit. So this team is doing on the books like 12 or 13 million. Huh?
You're supporting it though.
Oh yeah, yeah, we are. We know that.
Yeah, but, you're supporting $3 million that you're not even getting credit for?
Correct.
Wow.
Correct. That's, like, well, our team's only 100,000.
Yeah,
know,
but your team. Your team. Yeah. Yeah.
Correct. Yes. This team is generating for the branch $15 million, $16 million of revenue. That's not our revenue premium. That's not what we're making with the company. That's probably more like 20 or 21 million. But, you know, because like Larry gets credit for 900,000 of revenue, but Larry's actually generating $1.1 million through all of his credit lines and deposits and
right.
haircuts we take on annuities and all that garbage. So, you know, that's where it gets even wilder. So as these, you know, we have seven retired people on board right now that are going to be dropping off over the next few years. We got one or two rolling off this year. Our guy's dropping off in October, so we'll pick up 40 or 50,000 annualized of revenue there. And then they've got two that are dropping off their books that are, you know, $700,000 producers that'll be closing them out. And then he's got like another guy for $1 million gonna be coming off. So, you know, everything's heading in the right direction. And like I said, you know, it's been infinitely easier dealing with the stuff that, for the most part, yeah, pretty much everything. So, you know, things are going the right way. But we need to tighten up on our folders and, you know, cause we haven't been allowed to have our folders at home. Like we can't have them. So that's been, you know, that's been a problem. And we're going to try to get back on track with that. And then also with, you know, getting all of our COI people scheduled and that type of stuff. That's what we need to get. That's what our focus is right now. I think it's, you know, kind of on
get to
all the COIs and everything.
Yeah.
Hmm?
Get to the office and get those things set up. Nice. Yeah, I don't know how I'd work. I couldn't work without my folders. I wouldn't know what I said to you guys.
Yeah, you know, it's not easy. Yeah, yeah, Larry, your revenue premium last year, your revenue premium T12 is $1.19 million. So you're at $1.2 million revenue premium.
Good.
And they're giving you credit for, you know, $883 to grid. So.
Wow, you're doing a lot of other things. That's wonderful.
Yeah, yep. We do. It's wonderful for the firm.
It is.
You know, but
you want to be profitable. Yeah, you want to be very profitable. I mean, that's a good
thing. Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, so like if Larry's at $1.2 million and Barry's at $1.2 million and, you know, I'm probably.
Well, one of the things you want to do is start thinking about if you had a magic wand and could build the structure that you wanted, if you were completely independent, the whole Eric team, what would that structure look like? Okay. And then you lobby for it, but maybe even before you lobby for it, you buy it.
You mean pay to bring those people on ourselves?
Yeah. And then you get, you know, when you can get 60% increases in revenues and 50% and 30%, you don't really care. Okay. That you're putting out a little extra money for another assistant. If that's the key to opening things up and you could get those guys to stop, you know, dealing with $50,000 accounts, then you get your money's worth big time. And then they catch up to you and they pay for it. Okay. I just hate the idea of waiting for management in order to run your company right.
To his credit, Eric's got the whole team deferring 5.5% of their comp into flexible spending. Or, you know, so historically I've done probably between 2 and 3. And that's what we used to bonus Christine. And that's what we used to pay for dinners. So he has a very large commitment from all of us where, you know, we're contributing a pool of money, a very significant pool of money. And I believe he was paying for an additional, I think he is paying for someone out of pocket already. You know, and our CSAs are comped very well, where our operations manager is making about $140, and then most of the CSAs are making around $100, give or take. And then we just hired a new guy that his job is basically like Salesforce and financial plans. He's a grandkid of one of the guys that retired, and he had to give a 3-year commitment for this, you know, in this role before he's able to transition out of this role. So I think, I don't know what his salary is, Tim. I don't know. Do you know how they're working his situation? I mean, they may be paying him $60,000 or something, or $70,000. I don't know. But he's pledging the fraternity, so to speak. You know,
sounds like he's his grandfather doing, was here. It sounds like he's doing something like Supernova. Is he doing scheduling?
The new hire. Yeah, he's supposed to be doing agendas for meetings. He's supposed to be, you know, helping coordinate the financial planners. Like, I brought in a new client last week. I pounded out the information into an email and sent it to one of our wealth planning associates, and she put together some cash flow scenarios for me, you know, and like the idea is to free us up to where we walk into a meeting and, you know, we kind of have all this information now.
Well, that's
I don't know how that's going to scale.
That's worth a lot of money to you guys. That's great.
It is, but I don't know how he's going to do it for 12 advisors. I'm not sure how this is all going to work.
Well, some people, you know, won't fully be doing, you know, some people will be asleep.
Yeah, you're right. You know, Elton and Bill are just kind of.
Right. So you're now down to 10.
You're down to 10, and then you've got others that aren't really doing financial planning and things like that. So they're not going to be engaged. So.
Right. Yeah, no, you're right. And I did a call with Carla Ransdell and one of our heads from the plant. Like, we did, they brought our team, not Eric's team, but our original 4 team, this concierge service the firm's doing, where they scheduled a call for us with like the head of planning and a tech specialist and one of the planning associates that helps us do all the plans, and they're trying to roll out, you know, get teams like us to be fully utilizing the firm's resources. And Carla followed up and scheduled a call for us to help us, you know, with our planning penetration and everything. Like, right now we're at 51%, which at the firm is this epic next level. You know, our goal is 100%. You know, in my household, I had 30 of 40 households. So I was at 75%. And, you know, some of the people I need to do plans for, you know, it's like an 87-year-old lady with $4 million that's never going to run out of money, but I've got to do a plan for her, you know, and I don't think I get credit unless I can figure out a way to get her online, you know. But, you know, the firm's actually giving us comp kickers on these, where we get extra 1% payout on some of this stuff. So, you know, they're like, we don't want people doing plans just to get the comp payout. And, you know, they make it like this outrageously difficult process to find the information you need to find, you know, like their idea is like, we just want you doing all the right stuff. And then if you happen to hit all the triggers, we'll pay you for it. You know, like, they don't want people to reverse engineer to the trigger. So, you know, we're working on that and figure out who's missing plans there and trying to go through that process as well. We're trying to get to 100% planning and update the plans like we should. You know, we do a plan and then, like, you know, we don't look at it for 2 years, you know, whereas maybe we should probably be reviewing it every 6 or 8 months at least. You know,
probably should be one of the 12-4-2s, probably should be one of the 2s to actually look at it with the clients.
Well, technically.
I'm sure it's a monthly table topic. Yeah.
If you listen to me, and my presentation has changed a little bit. What we do and what we offer as financial planners, as Supernova consultants, is we offer multi-generational planning with full implementation of the planning process through 12 scheduled appointments for reviews of the plan, two of them in person, and rapid response to your problems, 1 hour response, 24 hour resolution. So that's changed a little bit. It used to be 4 reviews, right? Now it's 4 reviews of the plan. And the reason is simply that, guys, we're engaged with the planning process. We're not engaged in the performance game anymore. The planning process is the whole client, right? We're engaged with the whole client. We're not engaged with, we're assets, liabilities, estate planning.
I.e., if your target's 8% annualized and you're up 12 and the market's up 20, you're still well within your plan guidelines of what you're trying
to achieve. Yes, and more importantly, you're talking to the client about things that are most important to them, their legacy. You're not talking about your performance. You're talking about how we're going to use their assets to pass on their values to their children and leave their legacy. That's what's most important to the client. That's what you discussed each quarter. You don't discuss... you know, the car you're driving in, you talk about the voyage you're on.
As I'm getting deeper into this, I'm feeling more guilt for not have gone as deep as I should have all these years, or, you know, for missing things like backdoor Roth opportunities. I'm sure we're missing a lot of those throughout our practice. You know, I had one where I asked the client, oh, have you ever heard of this? He says, yes, I'm doing it at another firm and I have $300,000 there. I was like, well, don't I feel like an idiot? So we consolidated those assets in. He was doing it at T. Rowe Price, fortunately, and not with this Merrill guy. But you know, we were able to consolidate those assets in, and you know, something where talk about the next level planning. You know, like I was on the phone with Stephanie, and Stephanie's net worth has gone from $5 million to $12 million in the last 5 years. So now she's single and she's at her estate. You know, she's at her estate limitations essentially now. And you know, I said, hey, you know, we should sit down and have a discussion with some of our advanced planners from my Atlanta team, you know, to talk about some stuff. You know, like she really doesn't care because her ex-husband's worth like $100 million and her kids are going to be totally loaded. So it's not like front of mind for her. But, you know, we were having a little bit of conversation about what else can we do besides life insurance and besides, you know, we're talking about the 5-year forward gifting for 529s and, you know, having some of those conversations. But when we did, we just did a CE event where we learned about spousal life slats. Spousal Life Access Trust, which I didn't even know existed, which is a pretty amazing new tool that, you know, this is the kind of stuff that we should be bringing to our clients that we don't necessarily know about because we've been slacking on our knowledge on that front. And also about, you know, if we have tax changes coming up next year, should we be talking to clients about getting some of these maybe, you know, charitable deed or charitable remainder or grats or some of these other, you know, property life estate use type stuff, you know, like this is the type of stuff that we should be addressing that we aren't, you know, we've done one grat my entire career, you know, like we did, you know, so it either means we're not working.
My grat will be coming due this year. And I will tell you something, it's very rewarding. I mean,
yeah.
It started with $1.5 million and, I think it's, you know, the whole thing is like $5.5 million now. And that I will get my money back. Plus I'll probably end up with, they're going to have $3 million, $1.5 million each. And I'll have probably started with $1.5 million and I'll have $2 million back. Right. And so
yeah.
Think how well that worked. Right. And we didn't do anything but just invest. It was nothing special. So,
we had a similar situation.
What a great thing for, you know, it's out of my estate, you know, and by the way, you set up a trust then that takes care of Marcia. Okay. The kids get the income, but if Marcia has any needs beyond, you know, if I weren't here, she could draw on that trust. So it's just good planning, right?
Yeah, and that's where I've fallen short because of all the distractions of the day-to-day where I'm not I'm not looking at some of those out of the box solutions for my clients like I should be, you know? And I think that I would say that maybe I guarantee it's less than 5% of advisors could explain a grat. particularly, and then when you're talking about some of the other types of stuff, kind of everyone knows, the old marital AB trust and that type of stuff. But, these are the types of things that the wealthy people, want to hear about. But quite frankly, what that tells me is I'm not dealing with enough really wealthy people, that I'm not, right. I'm not living in this space.
You got a 15-year Cupert that I'm probably 7 years into now for our real estate. And you know what's happened to the real estate market, right? So, I mean, talk about getting money out of your, it's just, and everybody's like, well, it's, it doesn't matter. It's 22 million or 23 million. And now they're talking about, going back to 5 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Surprise, So yeah, keep doing it. Taxes, raising taxes are great for estate planning.
Yeah, they're also talking about the portability of the spousal exclusion, and have actually filing the 706, even if you're not at the estate limitation at that point, if the wife lives another 20 or 30 years, you can then apply that spousal, spousal exclusion. But once again,
that's the stuff, Ryan, you should be writing about that.
That's a good idea. I'm actually going to write that down right now.
You should be writing about it. And if you need to get, to get details from your estate planning authority there or your estate planning attorney, but you should be writing that stuff up in a regular column somewhere to tell people that you're smart and you know what you're doing.
And one of our colleagues does write for the Palm Beach County Bar Association. She's involved heavily with them, and I think she does articles for them. I got to ask her what her scope is on that.
Just on LinkedIn, right? Just write a good article like that on LinkedIn and, make sure I get cued in on it so I read it. I mean, it makes you an authority. It makes you a thought leader. And makes people follow you. And say what you will, it's important.
Yeah.
Not everybody.
Yeah, I think guys.
Yeah, you're smart. Not everybody's as smart as you. You should take advantage of it.
Guys, I think this is part of the reason why this old colleague of ours, Michael Shapiro, got a ton of money from attorneys. And I think it's because he could talk this talk and they knew it. And he figured out a way to let them know he knew it, So I think that would be great. All right, cool.
Good. Keep putting the pressure on these guys to have a consistent service experience. Should be able to explain the service experience in one sentence. You explain what you do in one sentence. Multi-generational planning, 1242, and rapid response. Okay, that's one sentence. Very simple. That's what everybody gets. What do they offer? Keep busting their ass about it. Okay. I'm just saying, are you going to be able to protect your clients? Are they going to stay because you're calling them every month? And it isn't an excuse where you have a monthly 100 people and you get off the hook. That's not the point. You should not want to get off the hook. You should want to talk to them because you guys have experienced what it's like when clients open up to you. And you don't get them to open up unless you're calling them every month. They just won't.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, they're giving you more money, more assets because they're opening up with you because you're consistently calling them every month and you demonstrate by that you give a crap about them. It's not about the money. It's because you care and you want to talk to them. I can't believe you told me that. That is horrible.
What?
I'm glad you told me. I can't believe that. FAs are just.
No.
The reality is do the least amount for the most amount of money.
And sure. Sounds great.
That's what they all want to do. That's it. Anything you do hard makes you better. whatever you got, whenever it's hard, you know nobody else is doing it. That's what makes the difference.
So two quick things. There was some study I read, and you've heard the number thrown around a lot, but they basically say, like, most advisors do 95% of the same stuff, and the elite guys do that other 3 or 4 or 5% differently. You know, like, where most people do that, but it's the other advisors, the ones who are willing to just go that slight extra mile. It's not even like an extra mile. It's more like an extra, like, foot. And they're the ones that are doing it. Number two, I finished reading the, Learned Optimism.
Yes.
Good. And
wow.
I was dropping some of that on my mom last night about, you know, framing stuff permanently versus temporarily and how that can lead to, you know, my mom has some issues with trained helplessness, let's just call it that, learned helplessness. But, next, I've got like Play to Win. I've got, Get More Referrals Now and some of the Bill Cates stuff to get into. Is there anything, you would recommend I looked at, you know, right away? Like I read Power of Full Engagement, or at least I read the first half of it and definitely got the point. some of these get a little, you know,
I know.
You got to fill the book, but, do you think that's a good place to go next? Or is there anything in particular you would recommend for us to get into?
If you can really absorb Larry Wilson's book, that's not one idea repeated 50 times. Larry's book, Playing to Win, it incorporates a great deal of Maxie Maltsby's ability to self-analyze yourself and help yourself psychologically by framing life properly. Similar to the learned optimism in the sense of framing things, and giving yourself, it is something called stop, challenge, and choose. Stop.
Yeah. I actually read that in the abstract.
Right. So it's something you can read literally every year and you're going to get something else out of it. And Tim,
is that where you like stop? You ask yourself, like, am I doing this? And then like challenge yourself on how to do this differently. And then do you choose to? Is that where you choose growth over fear?
It's basically, it has to do with the map in your head. Okay, mm-hmm. The map in your head has been built over time, right? So Barry has a map, Larry has a map, Brian has a map, Tim has a map. The maps are all very different. They're built on what happened to you as a 5-year-old all the way up till now. And the way you react to things depends on that map.
Mm-hmm.
And as an adult, you have the ability to change the map and rewrite the map. A map by itself, and the reason he uses a map is by a map by itself, as soon as it's written down, is inaccurate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
This is where it is. I'm right here, face the truth, accountability partner, schedule regular contact. I think that was from this discussion. I wrote this on my computer.
So the idea is facing the truth, right? What is this a fact, or is this something that's in my map that I learned as a child but is inaccurate and out of date? All right, so stop, challenge your thinking. Stop, challenge, and then choose a new map. Is there a better way of thinking of this? So we used it a lot in like going, an example would be when we were, in the ropes course, we'd use the ropes course. I don't know if you've ever been on a ropes course, but it's very interesting. Yeah. You know, we had to climb a pole and people are deathly afraid of heights. Who knows why, but they are. And the question is, you know, what you're harnessed in, you've got two separate people holding you up. You go up a pole, climb up a telephone pole and stand on the top, and it's got a pie plate, but it's not stable. Okay. The pie plate is moving a little bit. So it makes you very uncomfortable. And then you stand up and then you reach up and touch a rope when you jump off and you're safe and everything's good. But people that are deathly afraid of heights can hardly make it up the first step. And what we do is we encourage them to stop, challenge, are you safe? And then choose to make one more step. Are you going to be in any more danger? One more step up. No. Okay. Make another step. And we literally would get a person to the very top and have them jump off. They would come down crying because they never believed in their life they could do that. And that metaphor is the way you handle all your challenges in life from then on. Stop, challenge, and choose. Let's say you couldn't, you've never learned to swim, right? Instead of just never learning to swim and being afraid of water, you approach it and you go after it and you learn to swim. You're not, it's like people, I'm terrible at public speaking. Well, no, you're not terrible at public speaking. Your map has been drawn to indicate that you're terrible at public speaking. Well, let's draw a new map. So whatever it is that is inhibiting you from being your best self, those are the things that we want to draw new maps around. And you do them one at a time and you gradually become a better self. But you don't become a victim of what somebody told you when you were 5 years old.
Right.
Okay? That we're not pretty enough, strong enough, or whatever enough to be whatever, right? That now you're an adult and you make new choices. And we all have those things that are in our head that somebody planted there. My brother is, you know, I'll give you one last story. I went up the top of a mountain in Lake Toksuwa, North Carolina, and we're walking along as a family, my brothers and our wives, and there was a rattlesnake that went across the path. And my older brother froze. My younger brother turned around and ran down the mountain to the villa. And I took out my camera and I tried to get a picture of the snake, right? Mm-hmm. Now, what made us react to that? You know, was it the snake? No, you always ask an audience, who caused my brother to run down the mountain? What caused my brother to run down the mountain? They said, the snake. No, the snake was just going along his own path, right? It was my brother's fear of snakes. What made me want to take a picture of it? My curiosity to get a cool picture of a rattlesnake that was pretty big. What made my other brother freeze? Just plain fear. He couldn't move. So that's what was in our map. And we were by the same mother and father with the same, pretty much the same history, but we had completely different maps in our head. So the question is, what's in your head that's keeping you from being your best self, both in professionally and personally? And that's what you want to rewrite. So Larry was, he's passed away, but he was a wonderful thinker. And Maxie Maltsby was one of those guys that can help people get through issues like you're talking about with your mom. So there's a lot in there from Maxie that Larry borrowed. Anyway.
All right. Appreciate it.
Yeah. It's fun stuff.
Are you encouraged? Do you feel like we're heading in the right direction?
Oh, yeah. You guys are, you're going to do a lot of business. This is going to. All we're talking
about. I'm encouraged, Ryan. Hopefully you're encouraged too.
Yeah, you're not talking like you used to, Ryan. You're talking about different paths you're taking forward. Not are we going forward and how do we get this problem solved? We're talking about little problems along the journey. We're on the path moving forward. We're not stuck in the mud wondering whether we have a path moving forward. So
right.
I think it's wonderful. Yeah. And Eric sounds very enlightened. I like what I hear. I like the initiative.
Yeah, what's
up? You know, I like the 5.5%. I love the initiative of paying for what you eat, you know, but I'd like to see a little more team stuff too, but that we can talk about. And I want to see a consistent client experience. Rather than just being all about you guys, it should be about the client.
Yeah, he's talked about getting you on one of our team offsite conferences or whatever, and having you speak for, you know, 45 minutes or something and talk about that process with the group. You know, like he's, to your point, you know, he's very open minded and, you know, his goal is to create a machine that can buy him out for $20 million in the future. That's
sure.
His goal. You know, so everything he's doing is to make sure that, and he needs, he says he needs 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 advisors to buy him out and keep the machine going in the future. You know, he knows, like, you can't just be like, oh, I'm going to buy you out, Eric, for $20 million. So, you know, I'm going to do all this on my own. You know, like, that's not going to happen. It's going to have to be, you know, a group of people. And right now with his existing partners, there's only maybe 2 or 3 of them that will even be around to buy him out.
Well, and what I find in running a business like mine is you've got to have somebody that is the future leader of the team. As many, it doesn't matter if they're 5 FAs, who's the leader, who's the one that's going to be capable of running this thing when I'm not here. And that's what he's looking for. So that's where you can demonstrate leadership. And, but when you're trying to explain Supernova, just explain to them that if Supernova, the client is in the center. Okay. It's always about the client. It's not about us. When the client wins, we win. It's client-centered. It's hard to do Supernova. Supernova is not easy. If we wanted to make it Chevy Nova, we would make it focused around the FA. But when we want to make it Supernova, we center it around the client. And so we don't take the month off because we run a seminar. Okay? Unacceptable. Mm-hmm. Unacceptable. Right, Larry?
I love that.
Right,
I love
it. This is not about being lazy. This is about doing the right thing and being proud of who you are and what you do.
I love that story about how Chevy rolled the Nova out in Mexico, and Nova in Spanish means Nova, doesn't run. So they had to change the name because rolling out that car is that the Chevy, you know, doesn't go anywhere. Nova.
Nova.
We did do that real quick, Ryan. In that meeting we did on the Saturday with Prada, they did talk about the box, the right in the center, trying to get all 4 or all 3 pieces put together. So he is thinking that way, Rob, is what I'm saying.
Okay. But he didn't execute. If they allowed that, then they're not executing. They may say it, but they don't believe it.
Larry, what are you talking about, the 4 boxes?
On the conference.
The disc?
On the conference we did on Saturday. The square, okay. Something square, he called it. Trying to get the client in that box, that square. That's when everything is
to the advocate level or whatever, the highest level.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
I forget what he called it off the top, but yeah, you know, he is looking that way is my point.
Well, call him on it when you see him. You got to have your values. You must have your actions match your values. Okay? So when you say the client is in the center and everything is derived from the client, but then your actions don't support that, that's when you're not in alignment with your values. And you're allowed to call people on that, by the way. In fact, you should. Okay.
Okay, great.
Great.
Thank you so
Thanks,
much.
Guys.